Back by unpopular demand, it is 3:24. We're going to tell you who actually ruined the Overwatch League. Spoiler, it was us. Yiska, how do you feel about killing an entire multi-billion dollar Overwatch competition?
Great, and I'm off to the next venture.
He's moving on. He's the Reaper of esports. He killed WoW. He killed Overwatch. He's coming for Valorant. Here we go, baby.
How does that feel?
It's
our role. That's how I like compartmentalize or frame things as to be able to emotionally deal with another Blizzard esports dying under my participation, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. I mean, it's not dead, sure. But yeah.
Yeah, it's not dead. And the year's coming quickly to an end, and hopefully we get some news on what comes next. Hopefully it's solid. But there again, there's also the Saudi League's finishing up. Flash Ops is, still going through its thing. I don't know why there's such a big gap in between the qualifiers in the actual competition, but that's always definitely something to watch out for. And then I think the Toronto Defiant also put on a Canadian Overwatch Fest. I think the stipulation is that you have to have a Canadian player, but that should be some other Overwatch to look at.
Can I just say, like, the stakes currently don't grip me at all. And I feel like nope. That's also true and reflected in the gameplay.
Yeah.
Like, for at the moment, it's not fun to watch that. Even though I was really hot watching competitive Overwatch after the grand finals concluded. Not so much right now. Like, I even had the desire to almost watch World Cup. But, like, now, I don't know, like, there's a lack of social media, social recognition, a lack of trying on the players. There's a bunch of bullshit going on with, like, teams getting disqualified. Like, even the hype teams, the players, like, flunking out of competition mid-air, like, while flying over. Doesn't really scratch the itch, right?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. I think you hit the nail on the head. There's not a lot of stakes. There's not a lot of, like, reason to, like, get invested right now because it does feel very, like, show match, scrim, kind of just all-star event, come play in this Canadian only tournament where you need like a Canadian player. It's like, okay, like, why do we need gimmicks? Why don't we just have like events? I don't know. Maybe that's a sponsorship thing, who knows. Regardless, there is no long-term like stake involved. It's just like, this is an event, it's gonna go away, nobody really cares just yet. And that will change. I wholeheartedly agree that will change in the coming months once we like learn more about what 2024 and beyond looks like. But until we get that official confirmation or we start to see more third-party TOs really try to establish a longer, as an example, circuit-esque campaign, there's not going to be much in the way of stakes. And that's not going to kind of entice anybody.
No, yeah, it's unfortunate. I think it's also like, part of it is having the Bad Patchy Mary memes and the involvement there, and like we're also just not culturally locked into it. Like, there's no posts on our competitive Overwatch. Every once in a while, there's like big upset, right? And then there's like unknown is reviewing the streams, and like I'll watch that maybe, but the rest is. It feels pretty left alone, and it's unfortunate. I think that it needs to be just a little bit more intention also from the official side to get this out to the folks and to be able to build stakes.
100%. I think there is, like you said, you pointed towards unknown, and I think a lot of the English coverage commentary for the Korean side of both Contenders and Flash Ops has been pretty stellar, and I think that's like the band-aid fix. But yeah, we need kind of, like you said, an official push to kind of get the word out, this is what's happening, because it is not something that people are like readily it's and that's always something I've always been very critical of Overwatch and Overwatch League, especially on the social front, is that like the build-up really wasn't there.
Yes.
And I think that's definitely something that hopefully either they do this in the future or they cede control to somebody else who's willing to do it. You know, whatever happens next, if there's an ability to have somebody else kind of whitelist the production of it, and the media and the marketing aspect of it, that would be a great change to have a big rollout. You know, I want these big teasers. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a big teaser, you know, looking at like League Worlds and like Valorant, like there is like a red carpet rollout of content, and it's not just saved to the day of. It's, you know, it's content all the way through leading up that is going to like emphasize a story, emphasize why the stakes matter to the players, and be super important. In the past, Overwatch is kind of like A, lack that, and B, when we have gotten it, it's been far too after the fact. Like I remember, I think it was last year we had content. I think it was the last 2 years we had content prepped for the league that was pushed out after the finals was done, which to me doesn't make any fucking sense. There, you're banking content for what? You want to try to hit that finals day as hard as you can, and the way you do that is by building up the excitement, building up the hype, building up the stories. Not, hello, team that's been eliminated, and tell me why you like Overwatch.
Yeah.
Sticks microphone in face, you know, like.
And that, in the future, I think this will probably have to be on the third-party tournament organizers, which are obviously not locked into that degree yet.
Sure.
I think, like, I hope WDG has a little bit more plans than what's currently going on.
Sure.
Even though I will say maybe there's a lot going on the Korean side or on the Asian side, which we are not privy to, which is fine. Like, we're not the target audience for that particular region, right? So that would be okay. But it's also, I think also it's a little bit on content creators to get excited again about it. And, you know, they are essentially the ones that are the closest to the community and to get why one would care about the storylines there, and that then that energy needs to be transported. And it's sort of like a chicken and egg thing, I think. We had an interesting discussion about the NBA tournament recently that they did in mid-season, right?
Yeah.
And it, like, there's the front that says, oh, nobody will care, it's all about the 500k, and it's like, for bench players, it's blah, blah, blah. Yes, nobody will care instead until enough people start caring, and then everyone cares, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
As soon as you like try to introduce that as an argument in legacy titles, right, or in legacy discussions, as soon as you introduce that into, like, maybe there's a statistical pattern where like that tournament champion also always wins the NBA with like 95.4% chance or whatever, right? Won't be that high, of course, given variance, but. You get the drill, right? Yep. Like, until it matters, it doesn't matter. And there's a chicken or an egg thing where, like, it doesn't matter because the people that matter or are able to introduce meaning aren't feeling it, but they would feel it if they introduced it or the others introduced it, right? So it's like a circular thing, and you just got to get the engine rolling once. And then the prologue also has to be good enough. Also very much true for Overwatch, of course, that the hype around or the value of that can be raised, right? Right now it just feels like, especially in contrast to what Overwatch League was and to the grand final, pretty lacking, right, comparatively. And I feel like also players are not taking it super seriously right now. They just want to play some. There are no organizations involved. It just feels very puggy.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, Flash Ops literally is very puggy, but the hope, the exciting aspect of what lies in 2024 is we may be starting to see if there are players and our like cores and maybe our teams out there that do want to take this a little seriously, you may be seeing the formation of new teams. Hard to tell who, hard to tell where, but I think there's something to be said about like how especially some of the Korean teams are kind of like coalescing. It's like, I mean, if there was ever a team to like come together, you've got like hamsters run around with like literally a who's who's list of like the best players in every position. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they might not win it all for whatever reason. Maybe it's a care thing. Who knows? But it's something to be excited about. And I think that's something that we have to kind of latch onto a little bit. Mm-hmm. However, speaking of South Korea, we do, I think there is never been a better time to crack open the vault, talk about region locking, talk about the effects of how cultures impact practice, all the things. But before we do that, we have to thank our patron producers and people who support the show. If you can't support the show monetarily, download the podcast, share it with a friend. Come tell us to not come back to our own shows because we have terrible ranks of main supports, you know? I feel you.
Oh, no. Hold on. Say it how it is, Joe.
I had the worst? I don't know what you want me to say.
What do you mean by we?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I did not mean we. I meant me.
Thank you.
I had the worst. Yes.
By definition, you are not mine are like the perfect ones. We established that in the cloudy.
It's true, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? Yours are pretty, like, safe.
That's the uninteresting point of them. Uninteresting, like you just want to piss off people. You just want to rinse them for the dopamine and saying IDK top four.
Hey, look, everybody was on that IDK tip when he was playing, and then once he retired, everybody just forgot and just wants to fucking write him off. I do agree. Chiyo and Moth had to be on that list. That's an L that I will have to hold. 100%. Look,
arguably
hands up. I get it. It was on me. I was hasty. I completely whiffed. Chiyo should be on there. I still think I'm going to keep it a buck with you. Supporters, we're coming to you. Don't worry. I still think Chiyo probably doesn't crack my top five, though. I'm not going to lie.
He didn't play that much. That's of course. But then you also probably can't have Violet very high.
Probably not. No. But I think people want to jam Chiyo like really, really high due to recency bias and because like how successful those 2 years were, and they were very successful. However, you look at those teams and it's like, yeah, he moved different teams, but he's playing with the same flex support and he's playing with literally like some of the best players to ever touch the game. That matters. But that also has to be taken into context for a 2 year career. Like, it's not a ton of time. Great, solid performance in the league, like some of the best. But for an all-time list, I don't know. Should be on there, but I think way higher, or I think people are trying to put him way higher than I think that it's needed.
That was my problem. I had like Chiyo, I think second or third, and had Violet 10th initially. And I was like, right, that doesn't go together. That's like, there's something wrong. And then I kept shoving and kept shoving and kept shoving. Then eventually, perfect list. What can I say?
It comes easy to him. But, typical genius shit, you know.
Let me see. Let me look at that build again, Eric.
All right. While you look, I'm gonna run through the patrons. Thank you so much. Episode 324 is brought to you by our patron producers and our YouTube members. Those being Battlecry, Refine, Bean, Bronze, Babu, Hal, Abu. Bronze about Boo How, Walsh and Rexane, Paul Melon, Sugar High, and our YouTube members, IMDRW, Brother Adam L, Ice M Jello, Fire Element 6, and AK. Yes, lambast me again on my main support list as I feast on your IDK gears.
I'm still shooting against Adam. Ugh.
Useless.
Yeah.
Actual speed bot, heal bot.
Like maybe if Mercy had been more meta, he has longevity as well. He has longevity in some good teams, but
holy shit! You want to know what just hit me?
What
is Fixa the reincarnation of Anemo?
No, because Fixa was actually legit this year.
He was legit, but I feel like a lot of the way that I just described Anemo, I could say the same shit about Fixa. He had his moments, but.
Fixa also is like has legit good mechanics. Maybe okay, not well, in real life.
Is his timing off? Like, I don't know.
No, yeah, like I think like that's a player that definitely can play flex support as well. And good, yeah, like sometimes it was just like first season was just very shaky.
Yeah.
And then arguably most improved player this year to me.
Most improved. That'd be a good one.
From
He definitely was up there
from
for sure.
Match fixer to legitimately probably roadstar in maybe not, but close to roadstar in APAC.
Sure. If you wanted to like have separate awards, I think he could be on like the ballot, be a nominee. All right.
Yeah.
Definitely was solid, but there again, not a ton of competition.
Nothing.
Xerneas, my goat. Day's goated. 50k on Hong Kong Star Rail. Let's go.
True.
Yeah, anywho.
What's also
that being said, that would be what's a little low?
He, like, Astra had it a little low. But there's just NA Andy bias, which we will talk about exactly. Aplenty.
It's 100%. As we get into who actually ruined the Overwatch League, was it South Koreans? I don't think so. I think they probably made everybody just a little bit better. Obviously, there's been some rhetoric going around about what the eventual downfall was of the Overwatch League, right? Like how the sausage was actually made. Let's put it that way. And somebody who I think has very mixed opinions on region locking is our own German, our own Bavarian fellow. Is that like a region?
Yeah.
I figured it was just where the Oktoberfest comes from. I figured, okay, so
it's basically the Texas of Germany.
Ah.
Much more Christian than others. They also kind of want to secede from the nation sometimes, and other times they don't. And
whatever it suits them.
Yeah.
So it's like the Quebec of Germany.
I don't know enough about Quebec. They don't speak French, I guess. But they speak a language that's definitely also not German. I will go on record saying that. And also,
it's not German.
I'm a quarter Bavarian, so.
Oh, okay. So I was like a quarter right.
Just like your support list.
Exactly. He gets it. He gets it. As long as I'm not totally wrong, we're there.
Content.
We're there.
Yeah.
That being said, should we region lock? 2024 comes around. Here comes the new commissioner. Sean Miller Jr. comes out. And he's like, look, my father before me, we had a Wild West Overwatch League. Okay. But in my regime, we're region locking. You can only have two imports. How does that make you feel?
So here's, okay, we, for GG Recon, we had, I already had like a discussion on that particular subject, like a 20-minute thing. I think like, yes. I'll keep it a little shorter here. If you want to see the fully fleshed out argument, you can watch that on the other channel. But the gist of it is, personally, I hate that shit. And I was vehemently against it. And I think that it also, Monty in an advisory position early in the seasons, advising against region lock, which was a thing that, to my knowledge, was on the table, was not wrong as suggested. If the goal of the Overwatch League was as ambitious as it was, which is a global league, okay?
Yeah.
Global league of the scale that the Overwatch League was meant to be would have seen structures established across the planet that allows for up-and-coming talent to realistically compete eventually.
Okay. Correct.
There would have been more academy stuff, and indeed, when the resources were very high and the amount of academy rosters was very high in the West, this is when hybrid rosters had the capacity to win the leagues, famously. Mm-hmm. Okay, and also the aftermath was very fruitful for talent development. And as soon as that stopped, of course, with some latency, because like it disappear with the disappearance of the academy rosters, but so did like everyone else. Like the rookie classes in terms of the Western players became increasingly sparse. Right, there were still some gems. Some of them didn't make it to the league because of age, but generally speaking, like the talent well was running dry. Okay, so as to say that region locking not region locking, hurt the league. You would have to say in the aftermath of how everything went, that is probably true. I think if you go in under the assumption that there would be a global pandemic, that there would be trouble with visas, that there would be trouble establishing a global league because the Overwatch League business model wasn't feasible to ever lift off. If you assume you're working a league on a localized base that also doesn't really attract too many esports fans outside those confines and might even be a deterrent to outside fans outside these specific regions or locations, then I think in hindsight, in practice, I probably think it hurt the Overwatch League to not region lock.
Sure. Okay.
Now, what would have realistically happened is, I know NA Andes are already like pretty much in denial about APAC being the better region for more than half the time that the separation took place due to COVID. I think it's entirely fair to say season 3, season 4, season 5 was at least on par. I think the especially the Shanghai season where they won, where Chengdu was very good. APAC is just a better region.
Sure.
And I think you would also have to say that the effect of region locking would also mean that you do not have any of the NA teams to that degree, right? Like the world's best players cannot be all brought over to the United States in order to practice there, in order to facilitate a better scene. Basically, like, long story short, NA would have just been infinitely inferior to the South Korean region. The question is, if Asia could have supported financially the density of talent development as well, because like you only have so many teams that you can bring in. Therefore, there's a scarcity of slots that then impacts the talent pipeline as to disincentivize people to chase that as they realize that they cannot do it, right?
Mm.
That impacts the global level of play. I will say, in hindsight, one also has to say that teams absolutely dropped the ball in marketing their players to the degree that it would have been necessary as to do... Yep. Like, I think they were okay in the first season. We got, like, shit like, you know, get out my pub, gestures stuff. We got Carpe, like, features and whatnot. We just got these characters brought to us a little bit closer, even not remotely as close as it should have been possible. We do not have to look much further than League of Legends to understand how much better they are at bringing these stories of these players that are very much... Look, like I still agree to Monte Cristo. If you cannot make elite talent sexy, you're failing in your storytelling. Right? That's something I inherently still believe in. And also talking to people like... Alban Deschalotte, who's the CEO of G2, he like just told me, look, every player can be made fun.
Yeah. Right?
Like, there's something quirky about their personality that will make them stand out. You just got to have the content pipeline as to bring it to the audience. I think there's just a fundamental failure of quality marketing in that regard. And I think it's a quality... There was a quality issue in finding the right audience, and there honestly was a quality issue in finding the right content creators also within the league. I think they did not understand esports.
Nope.
So, long story short, right? Was region locking, would have that been a better decision? Yes, given that everything that was messed up, right. I agree that it would have been. At the end of the day, now it impacts the scene very differently. I think region locking will be huge, but depending on the size of the scene, it also will not substantially really change much because depending on how big it is, we'll even pay for imports.
Yeah, honestly. It does feel a little too late. Anybody who wants to could. But there again, you're also competing with staying within your home region, playing in a more competitive region, and probably a better wage, I would gander. I think with rumors spinning around about the Chinese Overwatch server coming back, I have always assumed, and I don't know, this is, again, underlined assumption, that the Korean viewership has always been pretty solid.
Not anymore, unfortunately.
Is it better or worse than the Western viewership, do you think?
Worse.
No. Okay. Well, now it's worse. All right, well, I stand corrected. Yeah, I still would assume that in the way that I view what's possibly coming is more of like very regional stuff, you know? I think that can kind of grow into itself, which, you know, like you said, if you play under the assumption that this is going to be a global league, then no region locking makes the most sense. If you assume that moving forward for Overwatch, for competitive Overwatch, that we will be doing region-based stuff, then you want to showcase and support the region's talent, so region locking makes the most sense.
Yeah.
Am I wrong not to look at the gatekeepers in charge, both the league and some of the staff on the teams themselves, when it comes to like this notion that like imports ruin things? Is that fair to say?
Can you elaborate? What do you mean?
Like, if we're going to play with the logic that, like, because South Korea has such a density of, like, very, very good players, that's undeniable, but the cultures are so different, and with how much we've heard of, like, these mixed rosters or vice versa not necessarily working out, is there a failure to manage the teams that's been going on for a little far too long? Or is that just more indicative of esports as a whole, do you think?
Well, the one thing that has also happened, I think it's no mistake that during the years when there was still more resources in the league, that hybrid rosters were much more feasible.
Sure.
Like, having a sports psych, a translator, a team manager, a general manager, three coaches for every team, especially the hybrid rosters, it's just a different setup than having two coaches and a general manager. And the general manager also has to do translations, right?
This is totally true. I 100% agree. But I mean, like, let's not also, you know, season one, we still had people blown up. We still had like the Valiants completely just infighting from the outside looking in. That, again, I think prime example of just shit just being mismanaged. And it feels like it hasn't gotten that much better, but the lack of resources may have like covered it up a little bit. Is that fair to say?
I'm so unbothered by infighting. Like, as long as everything is legal there, there's no correlation for me between infighting and football play. To a degree. Of course, if it gets to the points that is alleged about Boston, where they stage a mutiny against the head coach, that's of course too far. And that's probably...
I mean, how often has that like not been happening? I feel like there's... And it doesn't even have to be a mixed roster, but there have been like other examples of stuff like the Boston claim that have been going on for...
True.
It feels like every other season at the very least.
But like, I'm sorry, that's not extraordinary in any kind of environment that you could have, even in T-Sports. That's just the same. This is a fundamentally cutthroat thing, right?
It is. That I agree with. I think there is something to competition, to like raising stakes. My point is that there has been a failure to manage and like govern how hot that's getting. If you lose the classroom, and again, allegedly, the classroom throws the teacher out, I'm sorry, you're a shit teacher.
Right.
Whoever hired you may need a performance review. Like, That can't happen. That is a waste of money. If I'm going to assume, and again, maybe it's not a safe assumption. If I'm going to assume, in this case, the teacher is the coach, that I'm trying to create a good school, I'm going to want to hire good teachers for the future so that the reputation of the school grows, I attract more students, attract more funding, yada, yada, yada. Obviously, not necessarily the same like ties to Overwatch, because I think we knew we were on our way out. But I really begin to question like the gatekeepers at the top, and sometimes even the staff themselves, when it comes to like how can we really not point the fingers towards them. And I think the players have a lot to do with this as well. But at the end of the day, somebody's signing them, right?
Right, but the problem is, like, you also do not really have the capacity to vet them enough, and also you probably don't have the capacity to apply pressure to them, because you need to play them. You cannot just bench them if you only have six players, right, most of the time. So the leverage that coaching staff has these days is also limited. I will say, okay, let me say, in the Boston situation, I think it's very possible, it's more likely that the coach messed up than the players, right, all being the issue. And
probably,
I think there's still something to be said about that particular roster having a combustion rate that is above average, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it is also entirely possible, and I'll tell you this as a teacher, and this is not cope, and this is not teacher talk, it's totally possible that five players are wrong and the coach is correct.
Oh, 100%. I don't doubt that.
And a coach losing the locker room is not always on the coach. There's also just some players that eventually are just like not good enough to justify their shit.
And, yeah.
Okay, but yeah, in most cases, like the problem is if you just want like a nod coach, like yes, we can do this, yes, and you're just like a paycheck collector. If that's the optimal coach,
you're useless. Yeah, I don't want you either.
Right, but like that's objectively what some of these players want, because they have no
100%. Yes, like they have no like authority, like tolerance.
Like, if you can say, like, if people are saying this, I think that's something that came through the episode, like, when they asked, I don't know how this came up about. Someone said it, like, having Chio compare Rush and Gator, and he said, like, both are, like, Rush is better, but both are not useful. I'm sorry, you capping, bro. Like,
I feel like that's the most, like, player sentence of all time, that, like, coaches do nothing and they're not really that useful. I can do it myself.
Yeah. Your whiny shit costs you the championship. Like, just take the L. The coaches managing your baby ass is the reason you got one.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but, like, ban children's temper being managed is not something that will be on the radar of those people, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is what it is. It will be eternally. Like, I think I have what did I call it? Esports, hashtag esports fallacy?
Yeah.
From 2018, where it's basically like coaches will forever not be valued by their players unless... especially in Overwatch, unless it's like PR talk, a lot of them are just cocky, and it's part of the experience. Maybe you also need to be accepting that they think they can be the best, but like, make no mistake, if you're a decisions maker in a GM position, you still want the best coach in every single time. They still determine it. They add coaches with clear track records that show that teams improve once they join them. They are clear coaches that show that they can do it with multiple rosters. They are coaches that show they can do it with little budget. I'm sorry. There's something, even if they're just good at team building and whatnot, there is something tangible about coaches like Gunba, like Christopher, that get results that outperform their resources. And they have done so reliably every single season they were in charge of those rosters. Okay. So, to deny their value is weird. And I think like teams, especially like Spitfire, they also have a much more, their engine and how they win games is different. It is like they believe in Christopher, right? And I think it's also quite illuminating to see how Christopher interacts on these podcasts with his former players when Hardy just tells him, you know, I think that was on you, that loss, talking to Chris, right?
Mm.
Like, that's the type of transparency I think is dope between coaches and players. I don't think it needs to be a hierarchy or whatever, but there needs to be some respect that this guy isn't just a pace, like that the head coach isn't just a paycheck stealer, right? I think, like, especially what Gator said about their long-term strategy in terms of like bringing Hawk in, playing him more in playoffs, that being a better outcome, them taking London more seriously, this is all hubris that had they listened to Gator more, I think they would have gone farther. They probably would win the Overwatch League after that. And you just
100%. It's just, how do you? And this was like my MO from preseason to now, like playing out before everybody's eyes. How do you try to like rally that classroom? Is the coaching staff, if we're gonna like go full LS MTG color theory, right? If the colors don't match or if they're not complementary, and you're speaking different languages, big bunny ears for audio listeners, you're never going to be able to kind of communicate, or you're just jamming Hawk in and now you've got a mutiny on your hands, which was a complete other scenario that I feel like we established in the preseason when we started ranking these teams. And I almost took you on a Lord bet that Atlanta wouldn't like make playoffs or some shit. Or no, it was Toronto, Atlanta, which, you know, to be fair, I would have lost, but, you know, the idea still stands. It's like, I just don't know how that team, if anything were to go wrong, who's going to help them? And like, I think Wizard Young making a lot of sense. Like, they did solve a lot of those issues with like Dong Hack. I think Wizard was a great ad. Like, they had ways to try to like mitigate that as much as possible, at least like from the outside looking in. But nothing about it seemed to be like thought out in the sense of like, we're trying to find a good culture fits. This was like, these are good players and good players should make a good team. And that can be the case.
It was up until the case for most, yeah, it was, I think
100%. That, yeah, it was, it 100% was right up until it wasn't.
Yeah.
And then that's when you really like have to have either fail safes in place. You really need those support staff members. And again, I feel for like the staff, because I know that everybody's working on like a super low budget. Everybody's overworked. I get it. 100% I do. But you're also not doing yourself any favors. It's hard for me.
I'm sorry. Like, if you're a player on that roster, and you lose to Spark in the mirror, and you get away going like, it was the right decision to not listen to the coach.
Yep.
You're losing. Like, you lose fans. Great. You're shit.
Yep. And this isn't a complete, like, this isn't just an Atlanta bashing podcast. That type of shit has happened in esports.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Nauseam,
that's
across
a lot,
the years.
Just one of the many examples that,
yes,
where players thought they were smarter than the coaches, and
yep,
in the end, like, it always bites them. I will not say always, because they're definitely bad coaches as well.
Sure.
It definitely hurts also trusting in a coach that is inherently incompetent.
Dumb. Yeah. Agreed.
But we're really far in the vetting process. A lot of the coaches that are around have been coaches for a long time, or have been in the league for a long time. They are kind of proven.
I agree with you. What I'm about to say is not from my point of view. I agree that most of the coaches that are in the league as it stands currently are quite good. Do you think the players give a fuck?
That's the problem is you do not have any recourse. You do not have any leverage on these players.
No. And I agree with like the vetting point. That is 100% like the first thing that I will like combat myself with is like, okay, how mad can I afford? How much emotion can I afford to like the staff and the GMs when the off season has to go as quickly as it is? I get it. If I hear that, like, you know, Shy is on the market and I can get him if I act now, you know, there's a fucking wholesale on great players and I need to move today. I get that. But I will forever and ever quote Arnold from Gen G that the key to winning a championship is trying not to blow up along the way. You know what I mean? Along those lines. Trying, and I think that either inherently they had the right players or they lucked into it, or this was the master plan all along from Gunba. But I think Florida had a great, great fucking lineup. It was a great mix of like good personality, because this is another thing that I think that podcast from the Uncoachables, shout out Hunter, shout out Mr. Commander X and Chris. Fantastic, super fun podcast. Definitely check it out. But one of the things that Hunter brought up was like the culture guy, you know, the I hate to just use him as the example, but I feel like he kind of fits the backbone, the Dante, the Spongle. The guy who makes the sparkle, the someone, you know, the guy who kind of is like the culture fit, who's yep. good, everybody respects, everybody enjoys teaming with, and just is a great teammate, but also is somebody that kind of like brightens the mood.
Yeah.
It isn't so serious. It isn't like, because again, a lot of that same stuff that Gator was talking about, you hear about esports forever and ever and ever and ever. We said this in the season one. About like, oh, if we lose scrims, we're fucking losing. And it's that extra pressure. I don't know that esports is ever going to get away from like trying to win scrims, but I feel like we were doing a good job as like a general idea of esports, like the scene, the wider scene as a whole, of reeling that back in and more focusing on practicing and like trying to understand and more like focusing on review and structuring that and creating a more healthy kind of ecosystem in that way. But you will always get those teams. And I think Gator gives like a great example from Atlanta that like you said, they're just so caught up on mirroring and like trying to ego everybody that you can't get out of your own way. And it's if we don't win right now, we can't put Hawk in. If we put Hawk in, we're going to lose scrims. If we lose scrims, then we're just going to lose. We can't do that. You know what I mean? Like that mindset is so easy to get caught up into. I feel like it's a plague. It's just like this mold that you have to exterminate quickly. You can't let that creep up into you, because that will, like Atlanta showed, it will rock all the way through. It will last until the season end, until you have to blow up the roster.
Yeah.
It's so hot. It's so hard to get rid of. Yeah. I don't think you can. In season, it's like, yeah, no, and I feel for them, I feel for Gator, I feel for Hawk, because I agree, I think Hawk probably should have been integrated. But I think Hunter kind of alluded to it that like maybe Dante was that fit for Glides as well.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, in hindsight, you got to say like that was an L to trade him, right? And once again, that's I'm not sure what happened there, but like.
Yeah,
it's like that was their strength in many ways, to play these heroes that Dante can play. Therefore, the first half was better, and ironically, that came around again, and they would have been much better had Dante stayed. I'm pretty convinced.
Yeah. Yep. It was tough. I don't doubt that. I think like having a backup previously. That's a whole nother argument to have when it comes to the Gladiators, is like the initial team build was already kind of cooked. And I think people are kind of like seeing that now, where it's like, yo, like, do we really need Yaki? You know, should we get like,
yeah,
I don't know, another tank.
Yeah.
A culture, maybe. some other piece, because A, homie wasn't used most of the year. B, he wasn't great when he played. Simple as.
Yeah. Could have worked out a different way, but yeah, I generally agree, like, by that time. I think Yaki's still held in high regards, but yeah, I don't know. That's one I'm willing to give more lenience on. I think it's... the back line is a little iffy. I think you could,
sure.
could just, like, probably not have to play double flex. I think if you have Dante, it would have probably been better to start out with two tanks.
Sure.
But yeah, what do you can you do?
I would have loved to see Glads, and I hate to just always use this as an example, but I would love to see what that like that roster looks like if they try to be a little bit more stylistic. And I don't know that you can make that roster play stylistically. I think when you have players that are of that like world class caliber, having them play something that isn't just like the bog standard probably feels like you're just like waving the white flag, and you probably can't get them to do
that. I'm so sick of that shit, dude. Like, yeah, you're not as good at the meta comp. Like, deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. It's there is an art to team building. There are so many different like attitudes and like cultures that you have to balance. I feel for a lot of the team builders, but at some point, somebody's got to kind of take a hit. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to keep it a buck with you. You look at Boston, you look at Washington, there's a couple of like decision makers there that are the same. Somehow, each of the teams never kind of live up to expectation. Somehow, they always seem to have internal struggles. Maybe we need to stop signing just the best players, and we need to find a way to more carefully vet, I don't know, scouting is another, big buzzword. It's tough.
There's just no way. It's just a shit situation. You just gotta hope for the best meta role, and it's a gamble. The import stuff is... importing players late into the season is rough.
Sure.
I think just inherently that system was unworkable in many ways if you wanted to have a truly competitive and high competitive integrity framework. It was always going to be gambly. It was always going to be inherently toxic. It was always going to give a lot of leverage to players comparatively, especially in Korean lineups, because in a US, Korean trades are kind of challenging and imports take a while, especially post COVID with visas. So yeah, sometimes you just gotta have to power through it and hope for the best that things fix it themselves. And sometimes you need a meta to help you out in order to fix you.
100%. Definitely think that winning is the best remedy to any kind of internal issues. But getting to that point after you hit that slump of we had a bad meta, we're losing all the scrims, everybody's morale's down, everybody's fighting with each other. That's such a hard thing to get to, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's where my mind comes back to the debate that I think you and I have had since I think we kind of became friends, is do mixed rosters work?
Yeah.
You know, can you feasibly at this stage in Overwatch, does it make the most sense? You have some success stories, obviously. I think one of the more slept on ones this year, was Toronto. And I don't know if you want to call it a success story, but I think it was way better towards the end than it was at the beginning.
Yeah.
Right? Ended up working out, but look at the players that they grabbed. Again, I will forever call Toronto mid, but you know what's not mid about them? Their content team. Source Code was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I will forever big up their content team and the content that they did. The Koreans that they got actually spoke good English. Opener has beyond casual English skills.
Yep.
He's nearly fluent, I would say, at least from the examples that they showed us, right? I think Spectra also had great English. So it's not just, let's just go get some Korean talent and plug it in and we're going to play. No, there was some kind of selective process. It made sense. And they were two maps away from making playoffs. Which is impressive for a team that looked like hot ass most of the
season. They were one fight away from making playoffs against Boston, right?
One fight. Another fight versus London. You know, they were two solid chances away from making a playoffs at home. That is a relative success compared to the beginning of the season, which was hot, hot ass.
Yeah. Yeah. For a turnaround from that punch,
it was good.
I definitely agree. Yeah.
But that's a great example of, I would say, doing it right. You have players that want an opportunity. It's towards the end of the season. Yes, they gambled and they struck hard gold.
This is where Canada helped them a lot, though, because they actually had this the chance true. To make the changes.
I agree.
And apply the
I
pressure
agree.
And do the things, right? Like, that's the reason yep. why Toronto got the final, because, like, it was so trivial to get Korean visas or international visas to that location, right?
100%. And, like, that has to be taken into consideration, and I get that. I'm not necessarily saying mid-season adaptation. I'm just saying, like, okay, let's take, like, a recency biased mixed roster and see like how they are different to other things. You know what I mean? Like everybody wants to claim, and I feel like this is always like the age old like rebuttal to this like debate, is that, well, if Shot can do it, then everybody else should be able to make a mixed roster. I'm sorry. You're not winning everything. You may not even be winning every scrim. You don't have two titles. You don't have some of the best coaching staff ever. Like just pointing at the San Francisco Shock and going, oh, well, if they can do it, you can do it. I'm sorry, that's head ass.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
I agree, even though I will say there have been other examples other than the Shock. Also, more recently, like I'm thinking of the Glads, Season 5. That was a successful sure. roster that ran yeah. on hybrids. I'm sure it wasn't smooth, but like it still works to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
So like there are positive examples. You also it's also hard to disagree with two titles.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, I mean, Shock was very close in Season 5 as well as a hybrid roster. Getting 100%. There. So they work, they're just hard. But like other rosters also have their hardships.
That I don't disagree with. I do not disagree that like everybody is going to go through the ringer. And even the teams that like look perfect probably went through the ringer as well. That I think Shock probably had as much blow up, if not more. With some of those original rosters, comparatively speaking, right? It's who you have, it's how you manage it. How can you get them back to winning so that the Saul goes away? Because I guarantee you, that Shock roster in Season 2 doesn't win. They don't win season, you know, they don't win the following season. They probably aren't on the trajectory to make a three-peat, you know, last year. You know, like, it's winning does a lot. It's right up until you lose that shit looks great.
Yeah. Look,
this is
in the end, it's like it's a concoction and one that has so many variables that sometimes it will blow up in your face and sometimes it will be good. I think it's about a 50-50 situation of like hybrid rosters being very good during Overwatch League seasons or none of the hybrid rosters really standing out heavily. I think that doesn't disprove the concept. I also don't think it proves the concept. I think it's just a workable concept.
I would agree there. Yeah.
I think that it feels like the initial buy-in is easier in terms of like, I think it feels less emotionally taxing for staff to have rosters that all speak the same language and are from the same culture, which is why there was this Korean, like more and more Koreans coming in, because it just like if you already have four, then you might get the fifth one and start them all. Or if you have three, you might as well get two bench players and then work from there, right? Like, I get the incentive, but also very often, unfortunately, that led to. It's not like they're then Korean head coaches. Readily available to manage these rosters, so very sure. often like a Western coach would have to coach yep. these guys, and that's less efficacious, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, yeah, okay, let's go in on that take. Of course, I think like the headline is that, to use that as a podcast title, is had ass. I understand that you, the dude, look. I know this space. This is my livelihood, right? Like, I get that a spicy title will get you clicks, and I get it from that angle. You gotta think a little. We get that, like, the context in that it's made, but, like, look, this is social media age. You gotta be a little bit more sensible, right? Like, you can have a baity title. This wasn't even baity, right? Like, there was nothing clever about this in the hidden meaning or whatever. Like, you there's sure. a way... how to phrase this where like you get to the heart of the subject and it's still pretty spicy, okay, without mm-hmm. sounding dumb, right, in that quote. Now for the the essence of the quote, of what Geta meant. Cope. Dude, cope. I'm going to tell you 100%, like, if this actually goes through and all of this keeps happening and, like, we're region locking, we're actually not having enough resources of bringing imports in, you show up to international events and you get your cheeks clapped every time. Like, the fact that Western players were competitive with Korean players at all was because they were playing under their cultural expectations. And these fuckers for once had to practice. You guys suck in every other esports where that isn't true. Okay? Eventually, you will shit the bed. Oh, but Yiska, Valorant. Yeah, give it 3 years, my guy. Like, don't cripple the better regions with more inherent talent for 3 years. Delay their game's launch and expect them to be as good in year one, right? Like, as the other. It's coming. It's coming. And then you'll leave those scenes as well as soon as your guys stop winning based on your artificial advantage that you needed in order to have any illusion of being competitive with a global market in any intellectual capacity. Dude, there's... I'm sorry, massive cope. They, like... And then there will be like, oh, look at the World Cup. It was very possible. Look at these...
Nah.
How serious was that shit taken?
Yeah,
bro?
Come on.
Come on, dude. Really? Like, even if you do a double elim, it's over, right? If you put five Korean teams in that tournament, they finish top four. Let's not lie about this, right? If one region practices 12 hours, and yes, they are diminishing returns, and another practices six and smokes weed the rest of the time, like all the NA esports pros of the esports history do, you will not come out at the end of the day and win those games. I'm sorry, you're just not. Are you?
No. Likely not. How many times... I'm going to ask you two questions, one being a follow-up. How many times do you think Gator said the word fun?
I think, like, having fun is not...
Not a bad thing.
Yeah, no, it is. It might be positively correlated with winning. That's fine. You can have fun. I'm not taking you fun. There's also a level of suffering involved, though.
That was the follow-up. It's like, do you feel like there was too much emphasis in what he was saying? It was like, oh, everything wasn't fun.
Look, I'm not disputing that NA players will do better in environments that are fun. Like, it's possible that they unlock more potential there. They are not getting close to 12-hour grind lords, my guy. Like, they're just not. It's like, look at across esports history. Like, it's look true. At Worlds. Look at StarCraft.
I think there is something to be said about how you could take a Western team and create more of a boot camp culture. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but okay, here's the thing. Like, inevitably, the shit will happen. Someone will clip it in next year, somewhere around summer when we have the first international events or whatever, whenever it is. And they'll be like, oh, look, the
Western team.
Yeah, what happened beforehand? Like, what? Yeah. Like, Orisa once again has a shield and we can camp behind it and play, like, lucky headshot guy.
Spammer.
And Kevster carries your sorry ass once again to a title or some shit, right? Doesn't count, bitch. Like,.
The one team. Yeah, we didn't just get out of $1 billion esports league where 90% of the player base was South Korean. Yeah, you're it. Based. Pop off.
I'm sorry, like, I don't know where this comes from, that more work doesn't, like, mean better player. And then, especially, like, you have to think about this holistically. It is not that 6-hour practice NA, Andy, in NA... in the current or in the Overwatch League environment, we'll play there. It's devoid of all that talent. They will all be in South Korea instead. They will all play against each other on that ranked mode. They will play against the Chinese players there. They'll play against the other Asian players there, the Pacific players. Meanwhile, NA like has shit ping between the coasts where players are not playing against the world's best. I'm sorry. It will, like, arguably, it will be worse than it is in League of Legends. And then what will happen? None of you fuckers are going to watch any again. That's just how it go. Like,
it's kind of how it's happening right now, right?
If anything, Europe has a chance. That's, I think, much more possible, because there is a different culture there. I think Europeans are much more inclined to. I think there's something to be said about cultural default in amount of practice wanted. Okay, and there are Kefsta fiends in Europe, in European esports history all the time. It's almost more the average than it is not. Okay. They're definitely also look, through Counter-Strike history, there are also some Danes that lost their career to the ganja. Okay. It's definitely not the only thing, but they're the worst thing that an A talent can happen to an A talent, especially the well-meaning ones, because I do not want to say this is about the individual. If you feel personally talked to, this is not what I mean. What you will soon encounter is that there will be a culture of even less caring about ranked. There will be a culture that where it gets cringy of try-harding too much in tier 2 talent challenges. And that will just trickle down to shit play, okay? And then you show up at the majors. There are no Korean players that try hard every single ranked game anymore in high quantities. The average ranked experience will go down, and just the level of play will drop. Mm-hmm. And then the player that is actually driven, of which there are many examples in that region, will suffer from that. And they will not have the tools to compete with the rest of the world. Right?
I think that's wrong, but I think they'll just leave.
Okay. To where?
This is where my cope comes in, right? Because I think you're completely correct that, like, Europe in general has, like, a different culture of, like, tolerance to, like, practice, but also can, like, conducive toxicity in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because you look at, like, modern esports history and any kind of like team capacity, or even in like single methodologies of like single player games or 1v1s. If the esport is a global esport and China and South Korea are competing, the only people you can really kind of count on most of the time are Europeans.
Yeah.
If you are a Western fan, you pray, hope, and pray to the gods above, to the great esports dollar bills, that Europe gets an injection.
Yeah, dude, like that's
the only way.
That's the team that gets, like, you know, Kefsta especially. I think that's like the beacon of like where that guy goes. That's the team that will have a chance.
Yep.
Right. That will be the team that hopefully has some chance. It will also earnestly depend on what the system is. Maybe we'll have more cultural crossover than we currently anticipate, and it will be much more feasible to have a global community practicing against each other. But as it looks right now, that's probably not the case. But also, I think, especially also with Saudi Arabian scene and like the entire EMEA competing against each other, there could be something cooking, right? There could be, like, Kai Kefsta, right? That's a baseline. I don't want to assemble like a best of team, but the best of team has a chance globally. I'm not sure if I could come up with an NA roster that would get remotely close, and I don't think there's one coming up or growing up in collegiate either, or rather T2. Mm-hmm. While I'm not sure that's true for Europe as EMEA, as seen during World Cup, arguably. Now I'm arguing with World Cup. I'm running circles around you. I'm picking my arguments as I like. Be mad about it. No, I'm recognizing this was a bit hypocritical point, which I'm ready to concede. But
yes, I do think that like pointing towards World Cup is a little cope. That being said, if Europe becomes and establishes itself as more of a hotbed for like talent, I think that only serves the West in general, which only serves the product as a whole, right? We are at a... It sucks that Overwatch kind of is dissolving, or Overwatch League, rather, dissolved when it did, because we really had, like, a clear identity, and that was only underlined by the Uncoachables, and Gator kind of, like, literally talking about how, like, APAC only scrims Monkey. They only want to play Winston. That's all they want to do. They're running Genji into, like, Ryan mirrors, and doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, the cultures of how teams and players visualize the game, so different. So very different. We have completely healed from the GOATS meta, right? Now the regions have a complete different view on the game, which is going to create incredible international competition, ideally. Ideally. Big bunny ears for audio listeners. Now I think that kind of, like, it remains to be seen, but the only way we can really have great competition on an international stage is if we have a wider talent pool in the West to kind of pull from, and the only way that happens is if we get EU back online.
Mm-hmm.
EU has to come back online. There needs to be, like, that, those, yes, you can point to Kevster, but, and we've talked about this before, like, those starving players that have just been around forever. You look at that, like, that, you want to talk about World Cup, you look at that Finnish team. Super competitive, super, super strong. Those players need to get, like, we need to, like, reincorporate those players, mix up, like, send some EU players that are popping off to NA, send some good NA players to the EU, mix it all up. We're bound to have something that works. It's bound to have, like, an international success story. Are they going to win? Hard to tell. I'll leave it to Overwatch to just randomly create a rush playoff patch where they do extremely well, and maybe they steal a title or something. Who knows?
I mean, that it couldn't always happen. Like, there's a very 100%. It's just very unlikely. Let's say this.
It is. I would tend to agree with you that it is really hard, because you're gambling on, like, one specific style working, whereas, you know, by and large, usually poke or dive is, you know, something that can be played, and Apex pretty damn good at that. So
yeah,
it's tough. It is tough, I feel for the people involved. I think it would be a disservice to listeners and viewers to not really start to look at the practices that we did and try not to repair that, or try to enlighten as to, like, if you're going to point your ire towards something, yes, the players probably deserve it as much as anybody else, but we got to focus a little bit more on the vetting. And I know that that's difficult, and that's an unfair ask. I know that, but we have to have teams that don't just internally combust and just torch all of the potential, all of the growth that you've done. Hurdles are one thing. Don't combust. That's what I'm saying.
I got... okay, so I need to explain some Discord lore. Okay? Sometimes in Discord, someone will make an argument, like a statement, and then there will be an obscure emoji under it, and I can immediately tell that it's Eric doing it, and I got Eric emojied live on podcast, because look at what Eric put up.
What?
Look at this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm...
That's so passive aggressive. I love it.
There's so many... I mean, like, yes, it's not like an easy one-to-one, but there's so many, like, good European StarCraft players that, like... I mean, obviously, one of the best. Is that... That's Cyril, right? Am I wrong?
Finnish guy, right?
That's correct, yes. Cyril.
Yeah, okay. I was hoping so. It's been a minute.
Is he Finnish, Eric?
I thought he's a Dane. Is he not Danish?
Finnish.
Finnish. Yeah. The Koreans of Europe.
In a big way. There's so many good, like, StarCraft's an easy one to pull from, but I mean, like, look at, like, the success of, like, Europe at Worlds in League of Legends. Like, some of the farthest anybody's ever made it.
Look,
some of the only real competition that we've actually had from the West has been Europeans.
Dude, like, that's probably the one thing that I'm aching most to. When I'm thinking Kevstar roster, because if you think in League of Legends history, the team closest to the Golden Road, which is to win all domestic titles, MSI and Worlds, to this day, still G2 Esports. right? Like, they got into the finals. They won MSI. They won their domestic titles. No team has done that yet. JDG didn't do that. So there is a possibility, just the stars have to align, usually, right? Like, once they care, like, this is a thing as old as time, right?
Mm-hmm.
If China culturally locks into a game, they have a gigantic talent pool that just by...
They will produce,
numbers,
yes. They will
have,
they will find
some of
somebody.
The finest esports, right?
Yep.
Players. And the same is true for Korea. Just also based on numbers, but also based on quality and based on work ethic that will come in. And you got to meet them there. There are no shortcuts to this. You can say, I can get away with 20% less practice. And like our energy works to the, like this is our perfect peak. And it can work that way. But you still got to get your entire region into a winning mindset.
Yep.
You got to make it so that solo queue is a good place of practice and isn't just trolling. You got to get it in a way where tier two is treated as a legitimate competition where people are trying their best and not just, you know, trolling influencer stuff, trying to build their streams and whatnot. You got to lust after the competitive achievement, not the money, and be satiated as soon as you get your big contract. That these effects have all been a problem, and they are. This is also my criticism towards that statement that Gaeta made, even though I don't think he literally means it. It's just like a figure of speech.
No, yeah.
Like, there's not a thing that ruined Overwatch League. There are many compounding factors that just came together and made it a less than it could have been experience, right? And there are small compounding effects, such as the region locking mentality, such as the lack of the academy system. The problem is also the value of the academy system was pretty elusive. There was not a direct return of investment, even though I would argue now it's very apparent that there was actually a lot of value. Rich Sherrycane, famously one of the biggest values, I would argue. Like, a lot of that team came from Rich Sherrycane. The academy rosters in NA produced a ton of talent that actually became competitive and honed some of the talents that later on would be the ones that actually stood a chance at the top level. So, generally speaking, like, it takes more to get equal value out of North America. You gotta facilitate a culture that is less about anything but the competition if you want to have long-term engagement. Because NA viewers, I get you. Like, if your teams are consistently losing, you're leaving. And that's a big issue that all esports leagues in North America have. If it's NACS, if it's LCS, if your teams are not consistently competitive and you do not see that your representation at the highest level, because it's part of the culture, because your region pays horrendous, salary that satiates the player from achieving the highest goals. If your competitive culture in ranked games is to produce content and toy around instead of win games, then that's just how it be. It's like they are different incentive structures, which none of the individuals are really to blame for, but still compound into an experience where, like, just by the law of the large numbers of those factors reigning in on the individual NA player, it just becomes so much harder to be competitive at top tier level. And every once in a while, like, one or two guys make it out and legitimately, like a super, that come legitimately like a top three contender all time.
Yep.
But, like, it also takes such a style alignment, and it also takes a lot of resources in comparison to what it takes in other regions. That needs to be acknowledged. And I'm not sure if the North American region has it in Overwatch. I'm not sure if there will be organizational structure in North America that will outstrip or outspend the rest of the world.
That is
a requirement in order for North American players to be competitive. Or realistically, if we're being honest, even able to will into this, because the socioeconomic structure in countries like Europe is It's a lot different to be a German and play video games and go hard at it and know that there's a social structure I can fall back to, know that there's social health care that will take care of my well-being, and doing that than doing it in North America. That's a fair reality as well. All of this compounds. There are a lot of little factors that are admittedly not sexy and also do not fit a YouTube title, but you can try.
Why socialism will save Western esports. That's the title, everybody. There you go. I agree. I think that, you know, to put it on one aspect as to why Overwatch League crumbled is a little bit silly, and I don't think that's what Gator and that entire podcast would get behind. But
also, like, I went a little hard on Gator. I understand to a large part these podcasts are also therapy sessions between coaches that are sort of in their AAA meeting, just like venting.
Fucking hella cathartic, I have to imagine.
And also, if there is one guy that should be allowed to vent, then that's Gator, after building a roster that arguably should have just walked golden roll style through the Overwatch League, but ended up falling short. And would have probably won it if they had heard, listened to him more.
Yep. Yep. Good stuff. Shit is tough. We'll take the rap, though. We'll take the L. We ruined Overwatch League. Shout out to us. We stay goated. We're just the best. Anything else to say?
I'm not sure if I agree with that. I feel like I'm
already... I'll hold that L.
I already feel like I went a little spicy today. I don't know. I felt a little... I'm off, feel, you know? Nice. I'm on vacation.
He's feeling
right
free.
Now. I'm, you know, but
he's
I'm
ready
also,
to go play some WoW.
A part of me also thought, like, could be pretty good content to shoot one over, you know, ping pong back and forth. We'll see.
Hey, if you want to create
the pod wars,
the B-tier podcast beef, you know, why not? You know,
hey, Christopher,
go ahead, flame him.
No, I did all I.
Oh, okay, you didn't see audio it. Listeners. Yeah.
Yeah. No, okay.
You just have to. You have to tune in. listen, folks. I try to get him on board, but sometimes he just lies.
It's going to be a Discord emote. I can already tell. Okay.
Okay. Well, we'll have to go back and look. Anything coming down the pipeline, or are you off?
I'm off. But there's still something coming down the pipeline. I have a pretty big interview tomorrow. Oh, other than that, I got back into feature writing.
Let's go.
I think the Uber one turned out pretty well. Mm-hmm. Just like one of our co-founders went to DreamHack Jönköping and interviewed Uber there. He casted Brawl Stars, has been doing that for a while. Of course, they had their world championship there. Actually, like, from what I heard, actually pretty hype. Like, from what Jake, our co-founder, told me, like, that crowd was loud and engaged. So that was exciting to hear. But also just, like, talking about what a father does now in esports after that thing collapsed, right? And I think I want to tell those stories going forward a lot more, where people are finding... I think we also, without naming names, there will be a lot of hard decisions, or were a lot of decisions being made not to put food on the table, right? And that's a discussion that will soon be had to have for everyone. I like Jake just discussed it. I took the interview, wrote it up. Also wrote one on with Get Right about... like CS2, Swedish lands, karaoke, and whatnot. I think there are a couple of features planning, and then tomorrow I have a pretty big interview, but I don't want to spoil that.
Fair play. I think I know who that is. Because I also have somebody from that organization that I'm picking their brains of a lot of the same topics that we talked to today. Well, who is that going to be? We'll have to find out and see. Have a few interviews locked and loaded because I pre-worked so I can play Season of Discovery. WoW's back, baby. this is not going to become a WoW podcast. I will save you all for that. If you want that, maybe we can talk about it on the Patreon. Maybe we do like secret Patreon episodes of talking about. We could maybe. Hey, listen. Maybe we need to monetize the stun lock coefficient that I bring to a community. For those who are not in the Discord, we had a historic argument over the Attack on Titan ending, spawned by me. Unbeknownst, I was the Oppenheimer of the of the Discord that day. If that's something you'd like, maybe we can do that. Maybe we can talk about games and shit and media. But throw that behind the scenes. And yeah, don't fret. We're doing more rank downs. We're hunting for more guests. I think I have a couple tentatively locked in. I won't say who just yet because obviously it's still kind of up in the air. But we are doing more role rankings. That will be continuing. I will continue to make everybody mauled and ask me to quit my own show. So that will continue. I'm sorry. In advance.
Based. That's good content.
It is good content. It's fucking it's fire.
Do you actually pick your players based on content?
No. Unironically, I didn't mean to leave out Chiyu and Moth.
No. That's fair. But like, pick IDK and talk like, ah?
No, yeah, I unironically think he was very,
fair.
Very good.
That's fair. Yeah.
I will fight on that hill.
You're still capable of getting yes. German weak work with Wisa with that attitude. As long as you're genuine and trying to be logical. Then...
Yeah. No. I have yet to rank anybody just for like memes or for content. You know.
Very good.
Was Xerneas like kind of juiced a little bit? But I've seen him play.
I initially as well. I think like he's probably
the, he's good. He's super good. Super good.
Yeah.
But I will keep everybody posted on what we're ranking next. I need to go make some food, because I am going to go play WoW. So I'm not gonna lie. Sweet. I got shit to do. Thank you for tuning into 324. If you like that stuff, leave all that social media influencer bullshit, like subscribe, all that stuff. We will see you next week, hopefully with another rank down. Love you faces. Goodbye.
Peace.